Welcome to the Remembering Ethan podcast. I'm Chris Tafoya. My guest today is a man named Mike Clement, or Mikey C as Ethan referred to him. And Mike is a musician in the Phoenix, Arizona music scene. He's a pianist who's been involved in lots of different projects over the years. But the way he explained it to me, the bulk of his career has been working in piano bars, performing in them, and he also managed one for a while. And the way I met Mike was through a text chain from Jay Allen. When I was completing the last season of the podcast and concluding the podcast altogether, Jay sent me a text with Mike attached to it, and he and I went back and forth for a few months and finally landed on a quiet evening last month. It was great talking to Mike, and we had a great conversation. And I honestly felt like I made a new friend through this conversation. As those of you who listen to the podcast regularly know, it's been a few months since I've been able to have one of these conversations and put a show together. And just felt really good to sit with Mike and talk about Ethan again. A lot has happened since the podcast ended, including a tribute concert to Ethan in Scottsdale, Arizona this summer on July 13th. Which was amazing, and it was so nice to be there and talk to many of the people who I interviewed on the podcast in person and get to see them face to face. And it was a real treat to see all of Ethan's friends and fellow musicians that he surrounded himself with perform. And it just reminded me how talented all of them are. And it was really great to see Kathleen and give her a hug. And many of you that I saw there, it was just so nice to see you guys again or meet you for the first time. So it was nice to take a break from reality and kind of reflect on Ethan's tribute concert this summer and all of the conversations that I've had over the years with so many people who knew Ethan. And Mike was no exception. It was really nice to sit down and talk to him and bask in the glow of Ethan memories. So here's my conversation with Mike. I hope you enjoy it. Hi, Mike. Nice to meet you.
Thanks. Nice to meet you, too. Great talking to you, finally.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, thanks for being patient with all of our reschedules. You know, it sounds like we're both busy guys.
Yeah, scheduling conflicts here and there, but I'm glad we finally got this done. So I was looking forward to it for a long time.
Yeah, me too, man. You know, it was really interesting when I was in the thick of the podcast. You know, I was talking to maybe 3-4 people a week. So there was a lot of back and forth of like, oh, my kid got sick or whatever, you know. So it was, and it was a pretty good skill to learn, you know, to balance all the schedules and stuff.
Yeah. We all grow up and things happen and we
That's true. So you were introduced via text to me from Jay Allen. So you're a buddy of Jay Allen's.
Yeah.
Known Jay for a while?
I've known Jay for almost as long as Ethan, pretty much at the same time. I think during the course of this, you might want to forgive me on some of the name drops that you might include, because I've been pretty much a dueling piano player out here for the whole time. So I wasn't able to engulf into the scene as much as I wanted to.
Sure.
But you know, we had the thing going on and we were going through bass players, and you know, Jay Allen, actually the drummer, Nick Siegel, mentioned Ethan, and it's a good thing he did, because you know, we kind of met up, had a practice, kind of had a lot of similar goals, you know, similar musical styles, musical likes and dislikes and everything. So we kind of locked down pretty well personally. So, and then Jay was friends with him, and story was that I can't remember where we were, but we were trying to meet up, and I had never met Jay Allen in my life. And me and I believe my girlfriend at the time was there. It was like a bar restaurant type of thing. And somebody just shouted in the middle of all of it, "Who knows Ethan Newman?" I'm like, I do. You're Jay Allen? Okay, nice to meet you. Good. Where there you are. All right, let me come over there. So that's how I met Jay. And yeah, got to see him a lot. Tried playing, various projects with him, but kind of couldn't lock it down because of my schedule, my career and stuff like that. But that's how I met Jay.
And before we get into Ethan, why don't you tell me a little bit about yourself? Like, what instrument do you, you're a musician, and I see the guitars behind you. And Jay mentioned that to me. So what instrument do you play, and what are you up
Those,
to?
unfortunately, they don't get played as much as they should, but I'm primarily a keyboard player, piano
Okay.
player. And that's what I do. I do dueling pianos. That's why I moved out here from St. Louis in late 2003, so really December 03, and we started the Big Bang right where Belo's was, if you
Yeah, I used to
go
go
back.
check that out, dude. I'm sure I saw you in there performing. And I
Yeah.
would always wonder, like, holy smokes, like, at the height of all the songs that you knew, how many songs did you have in your brain? Do you have, or do you
I
currently
mean,
have in your brain?
I think back when I was recording with Ethan, I wanted to make a comprehensive list, and I don't remember the number. It was back in 2000, what that would have been like 9 or 10, 2010, let's say. I was making this list, and I cracked 1,000 by the day.
Wow,
Yeah,
that's
I know, but I'm going through it, and I'm including just any song at
sure.
all, not even like. Not like the popular ones or the ones I think people like or what, just all those stupid hair metal songs that I grew up on in the 80s, I'm just like these really obscure songs about like White Lion, it's
And the
just,
children
so I'm
cry.
like, well, I mean, I know it. I'm putting it in the list.
Yeah,
Wait by White
why
Lion.
not?
When the Children Cry, done.
Yeah, that
I
was a
mean,
good
it's
one.
not that I
Well
ever
brought up.
hardly ever play them, but
Right.
as counted as a song, so I just went as much as deep as possible, and then I started to break them into decades. That kind of made it easier to filter a little bit. So somewhere in that range, obviously learned more since then. I've been dueling piano since 2002, started in St. Louis.
Wow.
We moved out here to open the Big Bang. Yeah, and somewhere around 2009, I started recording or writing originals, and Nick Siegel was my drummer. He had come into the Big Bang, and he was a face there, a regular there, that he would always jump up and play drums because we really locked down on it. It's like a kind of a jam band kind of thing that we
Yeah.
were doing, and we just wanted to organize a little bit better, and that's when we started going through bass players and ultimately recorded a CD with Ethan, in 2011. But that's another story. We can get back to that. But so
Sure.
I've been doing dueling pianos for 22 years.
Wow.
Yeah,
That's
it's a
amazing.
career.
That's amazing. No,
It's a
dude, I mean, but
career.
it's so fascinating. I remember sitting there at Big Bang, and you guys, I'm sure I saw you at some point, but just challenging people, like, give me this any song, and I'd throw up like some Prince song off of, what was that one of my favorite album of his is France Skinny Man Died of a Big Disease with the lit Sign of the Times.
Oh, Sign of the Times, yeah.
Yeah, Starfish and Coffee, Maple Syrup and Jam. I
Yeah,
threw them
totally.
a card, and they were playing it. I'm like, how do these guys all these freaking songs?
That's funny. I wonder if it was me, because if you requested anything off of that, I would have played You Got the Look, because it was my favorite Prince song for a long time, and that's the only that one stuck in my head for quite a while. So
That's a good one.
that's, and I'm a little bit older than the other cats that were not really. I mean, back then, I guess I am now. I'm the old man in the bar.
Right.
But
I know the feeling.
back then, yeah, luckily there wasn't a whole lot of like trap or stuff like that that I had to learn yet. So we did
Right.
fall back on classics. It was, and that's what I, that's my wheelhouse, like 80s, 70s, 90s. So,
Okay.
and
And so you said you still do that today.
I do. Yeah. I left, so the Big Bang was going under in 2014, and I moved to California to work at another dueling piano bar to open that place. and that wasn't really a good fit. But the Big Bang was closed. They were bought by Amplified Hospitality, which turned it into essentially Low Key Piano Bar, which is what it is now.
Okay.
And I came back and ran the piano staff for like 9 years before I ended up leaving that for another opportunity last year in January 23 is when I left there. And that didn't end up working out. And it created a lot of animosity with the ownership with me because they didn't want me to leave and they were just kind of trying to manage their feelings about it. So they kind of banned me for a long time and wouldn't let me work there. And then that sort of time, you know, how time heals everything. So somewhere around March of this year, they were like, you know what, we need good players and there's no reason for you to be sitting home on a Saturday. So we'd love for you to come back, essentially. And so I did, not as the boss this time, but as just a piano player. So that's kind of actually cool. I don't have to, you know, schedule or deal with drama or
Right.
anything. So just get to jam.
Right. I can't imagine there's any drama though, because musicians are so normal and even keel.
Need a sarcasm font on this thing. I and we've had our share of it. And honestly, Chris, it's just if you go, I don't know if you remember, you were here before I was. And so Mill Avenue was probably much more impressive than obviously it is now. But like when they had bands playing, you know, a lot of Gin Blossoms and Authority Zero, you know, and Jimmy Eat World and all those bands coming out. I think back in the late 90s and stuff, they wouldn't they close the street down and it was just like a bands would just play in every bar down the street. Long Longs was a
So
big draw.
I got about 2 years of that because I moved there in 2000 to teach.
Oh,
And so I was just after the 90s, and they still would, yeah, there were a few times I remember them closing the streets down. But by the time I got there, Gin Blossoms and those guys weren't really performing there anymore. It was more about the Chadwicks. And I think, oh, what was that name of that band? They're like a funk metal band.
Was it Funk Junkies?
Funk Junkies. So no, I
That
wasn't there during the heyday.
still a
They,
local, local scene.
yeah, for sure.
Obviously, it kind of changed quite a bit over the years. Mill Avenue did, but that I did move here, there was a killer drum circle that was happening right next to the bar. So I'd get out of work and all these, you know, hippie kind of kids were just jamming. And I'm like, oh my God, it's just like the Dead Show. I love this, you know. And I was like, I thought I hit the treasure, the gold mine here, moving out here.
Yeah.
But it's been great out here. I love it out here in Arizona. It's been great. You know, Mill's obviously changed. It's not the same. Even going back a year later to that bar that I helped start and build, you know, it's just different. And so there's, you know, hopefully I'm trying to build, you know, a lot more opportunity to branch out. I mentioned like the jingles earlier. That's more like a side hustle, but just kind of something else because I've done this and I've done it here for so long. I don't know how many wheels I can reinvent anymore. You know what I mean? So I just like to sort of open up and challenge myself. And that was kind of the reason that I was really excited about the band that me and myself and Ethan and Nick were doing. You know, that was a hell of an opportunity because it was really good. You know, it just never took off because drummer quit.
Oh, bummer. All right. Well, let's get into Ethan a little bit. I think you sort of, when I asked you how long you'd known Jay, you mentioned that you kind of met Ethan around the same time as Jay. But what's the story? Like, do you remember the very first day that you laid eyes on Ethan?
It would have been a rehearsal. We had gone through a few bass players, and
What year was it?
either it was, well, there was me and Nick. The band was called The Final, was what we were calling ourselves, and it was just a trio. We just wanted to keep it simple and as raw as possible. So we did the recording live, and I overdubbed the vocals pretty much. That's all. But the music was live. We wanted to keep it real, you know, keep it raw. And so we did a few takes of each song on the record and stuff. And that's how we wanted to do it. But none of the bass players were. Either they're flaking out, you know, or they had prior commitments, or it just wasn't catching, you know. And I'm surprised that I think the reason Ethan stuck around is because he will always mention to anyone whenever I'm around. One cool, really awesome thing about him is that he always said that it was one of his favorite albums he ever did. You know, probably because of the rawness and the compositions. It wasn't completely, you know, prog rock or anything like that, but it was just fun, cool stuff. You know, and I think he really, really enjoyed it. So he ended up sticking around as long as the band was around, which was only a couple of years. But you know, through Ethan, I got to meet people like Jay. The Judge, you know, was always at some open mics in Yucca, and the last exit, I believe it was called. Was that it, what it was called? Last Exit, or
Last
do you
exit
recall?
sounds familiar. Yeah.
Yeah. And there was it was building, and I was like, and Ethan was always pretty busy with several projects at the same time, you know, but he and I just sort of locked down personally. So we went to some shows, you know, we saw some festivals, met some, you know, hung out all the time as much as we could with our schedules. So it was he was the most defining part of that band, even though it was like mostly me and Nick doing our thing. It was he sort of grounded all the stupid drama that would arise, you know, because he's so real. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He was always so real about everything. And the way he approached the bass, and even just, you know, having a few takes to get it, and then we recorded, it just was incredible. You know, he just sort of had that wherewithal about his musicality and what I was trying to do with the music. And so he kind of like, he was really versatile, you know what I mean? I don't know how he was on other projects, or if you'd known other projects that he recorded or played with, you know. But it just seemed like he kind of took each one separately. It wasn't like, here's what I'm gonna do, you know, so you guys need to fall into line. It was never like that. He always sort of had an open mind about everything, and he's like, okay, I get it. I think I get what you're trying to do here. Let me. So it was a lot of he got a lot of freedom to move around, and I think that's mainly why I liked it. Got
Sure.
to move around on the bass.
And what year was this when you guys had a project together? What years did that span?
Well, this would have been, well, I think the record came out, the CD came out in 2011.
Okay.
And so we had, I don't know, a couple of years prior to that. I mean, I think it was a year that we had that I had met him. You know, and Jay, I guess, and stuff like that, around 2010. And then we just worked for that year
Yeah.
and hung out, did our thing, you know, the record came out. We still hung out after that came out, and after the drummer decided to leave. I don't know what he left for, but that sort of killed a lot of momentum, as it usually would musically. So the whole scene just sort of, I went, well, I'm gonna go back to working and doing pianos, and you know, I gotta keep the lights on. If you guys are, I don't have enough energy to find another drummer for this. And Ethan's like, don't worry, man, I got you. We got drummers. I got drummers. I know a ton of drummers. Don't worry. Just come over tonight. I'll show you my video projector TV. Have you ever
Oh yeah, I
seen
remember that
that? So,
thing. Yeah,
oh man, it's a
that
guy.
TV was a trip. Yeah.
It takes like 10 minutes, like a lawnmower. I'm trying to start his TV
Yeah, you turn it on, it warms up for like 10 minutes,
Yeah, so, but things just passed, and we just kept in touch. And every time I'd see him, it was awesome. But we never
Now,
quite got up.
had you heard about Ethan at all before you met him, or like when you met him, that's the first time? Yeah.
Nope.
Okay.
Nope.
So
No. So,
you
like I
had no
said,
idea what you were in for when you met him.
no.
Yeah.
No, at that point, I was just, you know, we'd gone through maybe three players, bases that just either, like I said, flaked out or didn't want to do it or had prior commitments or just couldn't do it. It just wasn't a good fit. I didn't know about him. I'm positive, I'm almost positive it was through Nick Siegel, the drummer. And he's like, well, I know this guy, you know, let's try him. He's busy, but, you know, he might be able to record. And I'm like, yeah, I'll pay him. You know, I just want somebody that can come in and do the thing. So I didn't know him at all. Like I said earlier, it's just I was locked into that dueling piano career, so I didn't get to venture out into the scene that well,
Sure.
that much, and try to hobnob and meet people and stuff like that until Ethan came on and we started gigging, and then I got excited about it, you know. So
That was my next
he,
question. I was wondering if you guys took that project out and played any shows.
yeah, we played the Sail Inn a few times.
Sure.
Do you remember that place?
Yeah.
We did Yucca a few times. We had our, gosh, what was the name of the place? It was our release party. It was at it was up in Scottsdale.
Let's
It's
see.
not there.
You had Martini Ranch. There was
No, like not Old Town, but like north of that.
okay.
And it was a standalone venue. It was really pretty, really awesome inside, but it didn't last too long. I keep wanting to say Copper Blues, but it's not that. It's like something, something. And I don't recall what it is. We did a release there. We were going forward. We're gonna do long longs. We're gonna do the last exit. You know, and start to get on bills with bands like Joffy's Descent. Hopefully, we were getting to those guys. The Dry River Yacht Club was another group that we really wanted to get with and just get on a bill with them. Even the Apache Music Festival, Apache Lake Festival that they used to do. And we could never get again the drummer. Shortly after the album came out, he left the band, so it sort of just took all the sails out of the wind, or wind out of the sails, you know. So that's, we just played a handful of places around town, like I said, and that was that.
You know, one common theme between everyone that I've spoken to and my own personal experience of performing with Ethan was that even like a bummer gig was fun, you know, like he could make any gig fun. And, you know, if you played enough gigs with him, it's interesting because I'll ask the question I'm about to ask you to other people. And it's hard for them to pinpoint because the question is, you know, is there any particular performance or gig that you guys play that sticks out in your mind, you know, when Ethan was on point or just made an impression? And it's hard for people to answer because it was so often that he would make the gigs fun that they'd be like, oh, just in general, like they give me generalities. But do you have like a specific gig or anything?
Absolutely, I got one. Luckily, we didn't play a whole lot, so I can remember, I'm just having issues remembering the couple of the venues. But we did the release party, and then I started booking us as much as I could with our free schedules. And this was on Mill Avenue. It was the it used to be called Cherry. I can't remember what it was called when we played there, but when we played there, they were still doing bands. So you'd walk in, and it was like an upstairs thing. You'd walk in and go upstairs and then into the bar area, and then it opens to this giant, giant dance floor with this stage that's like 5 feet off the ground, maybe. And it was gorgeous, you know. And we had a handful, we had like, I don't know, 50 people there or whatever, which was good, whatever, you know. But that was the gig that he afterwards he pulled me aside. I was like, okay, all right, I get it now. Just that's all I said. I'm like, awesome. Because I guess we were still trying to find our footing, you know. And I pulled out like a We did a handful of covers, like we did Money by Pink Floyd, and I wanted to do this MGMT song. We did that, and then it just me and Nick Siegel, the drummer, just sort of were jamming out one song, and it went into this beat, and I ended up just pulling Paul Revere from the Beastie Boys out and just started rapping that. And I think at that point, Ethan just started wailing, just doing his thing on the bass, you know. Because there's only drums and vocals really on that song, you know, and it's very 80 rolling 8080, you know, kind of thing. So there's no real music to it. So I just had the wireless, and I was like, "Well, here's a little story I got to tell about three bad brothers." And I guess behind me, Ethan was I think that's when it started to sink, and he's like, all right, I think I know what he's trying to do with this band. Like kind of just keep it free. And like they just went into this Beastie Boys song from one of his originals that then they Nick started doing the drum thing. I'm just gonna do my thing. And he just started wailing on the bass, and it was just incredible. And I just turned around and looked down. I think there's a picture that we have of me. I was like on a light post or something in the middle. And I just was starting to look around. Somebody got a picture of me, so it looks kind of like I'm looking at them. But I think at that point, I was just like kind of looking around, going, yes, we found a bass player. Yes. Yes, this is going to be awesome. So that was the one that completely sticks out of my head because that was like the culmination of what we're trying to do. And he, if he didn't have it completely together when we recorded the album, I think playing a few of those live shows, he's like, okay. And then when he pulled me aside, and he's like, okay, I think I get it now. I'm like, I think you do too, man. That was incredible. That was just the chef's kiss. I'm like, thank you for doing that. Yes, that was the best Beastie Boys ever. So.
Yeah, Ethan had a way to lock in and really get what you where you're coming from. Sure.
Yeah, I mean, if you let him do his thing,
Yep.
obviously he's capable of doing it. He just,
Yeah.
some bands I would assume are more strict with their parameters of what they want to do,
Right.
and maybe as a, I don't know, I'm guessing as a bass player, you sort of end up sticking within those parameters for whatever, whoever's writing. If you're not writing the song, then whoever's writing it may have just a strict vision. And I was just like, let's just live record this whole thing. Here's the songs. Let's learn them. And then that just started to transpire live. And I was really, really happy about that. I sort of come from a jam band background. Like I mentioned the Dead earlier. And so he was able to, and we went to shows like that too, like some of the shows we saw, they were like Jay Allen's the same way, that's why I really love that guy, and I'd go to see him as much as possible. Just because he's so happy, he's so good. They were both just good people. And after playing at that bar, the Big Bang, for so long, you forget that you came from that school too, that whole train of thought. And when you get to play somebody with like Ethan, when you get to play with people like him, it just reminds you of, your origins. And he helped to, redefine my outlook on music while we played it together. That was really cool. Jay was the same way. He would do it too.
Definitely
So.
a common theme between, everyone that I've spoken with. Ethan definitely was an inspiration for a lot of people just by being himself, and his love of music was infectious, and his presence on the stage was infectious. Like I know that I personally, took bits and pieces of what I would observe him doing, whether it was interacting with the audience or doing goofy lyrics for a song or just, being loose and having fun with it. In your time playing with them, did you notice, or what did you notice about the way he would interact with an audience?
Well,
Or how they would like
I don't
automatically
think,
start watching him.
just watching him, because I don't think he had a mic. I don't think anybody, Nick didn't sing, But he could sing. I mean, maybe I did. I get he had a mic. I think we just didn't have enough time to explore all the possibilities that we could have done with that, So he was, if I recall correctly, a little bit more reserved, just kind of like, I'm still trying to get through these songs, And I was so used and so accustomed to improvisation just from doing my job and reading a room and just started just talking and stuff. And but we had time to we had time on stage. I would always try to bring in. He had a mic, so I would always try to bring him in, and he would come in. At one point, one show at Sail In, just turned into the Big Bang crew came in, and we're playing our songs, and then the Big Bang crew comes in, so they're like, play Santeria, you know, by Sublime. And we started doing that. And it just became just a mess. You know, it just the whole live vinyl, the final concept went out the door. And at one point I just look over, he's just sitting in like a sofa, just holding the bass, like just playing the bass. I'm like, Ethan, how you doing, buddy? Like, well, you know, I play these songs all the time for a living. So if you guys want to, I'm just gonna be over here if you need me. Just sitting down drinking a beer. I'm like, yeah, I know. I'm sorry. We should never have fallen into this whole Big Bang realm. But he had a personality. I mean, he wasn't afraid to show it. And we never argued or anything like that. It was just always very constructive. So never on stage, you know. Never
Sure.
on stage.
Well, he was
I just wish
very
that we had
professional.
enough time to really explore what we were capable of, you know.
Sure. So, you know, being a piano player, it's been my experience. A lot of the guys that I've met who play the keys have a really good understanding of music in general because the whole thing is laid out in front of you, the bass, the treble, the theory. You know, so from your point of view, as a musician that, you know, knows your way around a piano, what did you notice about Ethan's musicianship?
Well, it's
That he had.
well, he knew his way around the bass. If I recall, he liked I can now I'm trying to second guess myself. Five string or six string?
Six string.
Or four, six
Both.
string primarily.
Both. Yeah, but
Yeah.
he six string most.
I don't remember if he read music. I think he read charts.
Yeah, he knew his way around that kind of thing.
Okay, I don't know. I know he read charts. I've seen him play shows where he's reading a chart. So, I didn't, after lessons, I stopped looking at music. I just played by ear. So,
Okay.
played by ear since I was 14. I mean, I know how, I know what all the everything means. It's just way harder to read it. It's just way easier to listen to it and play it, you know. So,
Sure.
from his musical standpoint, I never really questioned it. He just kind of knew what he knew his way around so well, you know.
Yeah.
Don't know how else to say it. Did
Sure.
he read? Oh. Did he
Well,
read the?
I don't think he sight read,
Okay.
but he knew a lot of music theory. Well, so did he influence or change something about the way you play or see music? I mean, do you think you got that involved with
Yeah,
him?
well, I mean, I had to stop using my left hand.
Oh,
So,
sure.
I mean,
Yeah, that.
playing my job, you know, obviously we're doing, you know, all kinds of movement, you know, but you're not allowed to do that when you have a proficient bass player, you know. So he might just bark at, get off the bass. That's my spot, you know. Like, but I didn't it was just an adjustment, you know. He never got super angry about it, but it made me understand, like, well, that doesn't sound good. Like, if I'm playing this and you're playing that, that doesn't sound good at all. So it sort of helped me. I guess now that I'm thinking about it, you could argue that that was the first stepping stones to me trying to jazz out my left hand a little more, you know, because I couldn't just play, you know, octaves, you know. You know, stuff because he was doing that, so I'd have to kind and stay away from the whole bottom half of the keyboard. So that sort of transpired into, you know, I didn't put a lot of work into it, but it was on the forefront of my brain ever since then to take into account that part playing is essential. You know, and you know, you have to separate. I had to separate what I would normally do at my job, which is I have two hands. Here's the drummer and the bass player down here, you know. And then here's the guitar guy. Do all the fun stuff. And then you got to sing and play it all. And you just are so used to doing that at playing in that band, you know. That wasn't the first band I ever played in, obviously, but you know, it was definitely when it's a three piece, you know, there's definite lanes that people like to stay in. So he helped me, you know, adjust accordingly, I'd say. Does that make sense at all?
Yeah, I get what you're
Okay.
saying. Well, yeah, because that's making you change your entire paradigm on how you approach your instrument, you know, and approach
Yeah.
differently and look at it differently as well.
And hear it differently, you know.
Sure.
I'm so used to having to hear the whole, you know, thing that if I'm not doing that, you know, then I need to hear that bass and just trust that it's there, you know. And that was an adjustment, but I think you know, we never really I don't recall speaking in tongues like that. Like if he had theory, sometimes people that speak in theory are just like, man, I don't know. Can you just, oh, you know, I know where you're talking, but I'm just, you know, I'm losing myself here.
Yeah.
Just, you know, let's speak a different language. It was started like if they're like, well, if you sing an augmented fourth, if you're singing the augmented fourth, then that means I'm just gonna go through this. I'm like, well, okay, let's just play it, see what it sounds like.
Yeah,
And
right.
I don't recall him ever like we never had conversations like that. Maybe he understood. Maybe he came from the same train of thought. Maybe he was like, I just want to feel it. I know where you're going. I know the song. I'm learning the song, but it's not like I charted stuff out for him because I'm not really a good charter. I'm not gonna do that. I think he was. I felt like he was at home just listening and learning to
Sure.
how the song went, you know. He would add his own thing to it for sure, and that changed the whole, you know, view of the whole palette kind of thing, you know.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, things change. Like you probably know, you have this idea where you write, and everything that I was writing back then, I wanted it to sound like a Prince song, you know. I just wanted like just a simple pop punk thing. But that was not going to happen with the three of us. We were too loosey goosey, but that was cool. That was part of the fun part, you know. And when Ethan finally came in, and had added his loosey goosey stuff, I was like, awesome. Well, I'm going to back up my loosey goosey because this is starting to take shape now, and it's going to fit like where I thought it was going to fit like that. It's going to fit like that. You know, it's just going to fit differently, and that was. It was just really fun having him dilute the dynamic between me and Nick. Whether he was theoried out or not, you know, or whether he was thinking like that, it never got in the way, and it was never like argumentative or anything like that. So, you
Sure.
know, did you ever have experiences like that with him? Did you ever have was he very conscious of the theory behind it, or was he more, did you feel
Well,
like he was?
you know, the thing about Ethan was that he could hang with anyone, whether you were an accomplished professional musician or whether you were just playing cowboy chords. Mine wasn't like a musically trained background. It was just kind of like by ear and feeling and that kind of thing as well. So he approached it that way with me. I think he was able to tell, okay, you know, this is the skill level. And so he would adjust his, you know, when we'd geek out over music, he would talk to me in my own language. And I just think he had a knack for doing that with, you know, whatever level of
That's,
musician that he
yeah, that
performed
kind of,
with.
oh, that allows to what we were talking about earlier, how he was just so versatile
Sure.
to take whatever project was at hand and act accordingly. You know, he was the perfect quarterback. In every situation, he could just adjust, you know, on the fly really well. So,
And in any genre, you know, I'm sure you've heard about his time in As Is, you know, doing the reggae thing. And then he, you know, metal, punk, rock,
Oh
pop,
my God, that thing
country.
we used to dork over Metallica, old school Metallica, like you were just talking about.
Yeah.
We would
Oh,
that.
we bonded over Metallica real quick. And then when I got to see looking through his CD collection, you know, once we became friends, I'd go over there. I mean, the guy just, you know, Dolly Parton to
Yeah, no.
Wilco to
Yeah,
Slayer
you're right.
to, you know,
You're
everything. He just ate it all up.
Ozo Motley, yeah. I
Ozo
mean, he,
Motley. Oh,
I
I
feel
went to a
like,
couple Ozo Motley shows with him. Yeah, we,
I feel like I did too. I feel like we went
yeah.
to an Ozo Motley show for some reason.
For sure, yeah.
yeah, no,
Plus,
you're right. I forgot about that. He had a wide, diverse palette of musical
very
influence.
eclectic.
Maybe he just ate it all up, you know? But
Yeah.
that's funny. He had a CD or a cassette of the one of the Little Green Men or whatever it's called. What was it?
And Anitta's
Yeah.
part of this.
Yeah. And
Yeah.
you knew that band. And you're like,
Oh
what the
yeah,
heck?
it's one of my favorite bands. And I go, dude,
What are you? How do
how do you
you
know about these
know this?
guys? Yeah, and he knew the lyrics, dude. He would sing, with this other Mexican. I'm forgetting the name of the band, but they had a song called "Puto" or something like that, which is a curse word in Spanish. But we went to go see this band, and he's saying every song in Spanish. I was just like, dude,
What
you're the coolest white guy I've ever met, man. He's like, yeah,
story.
right on. He knew all that, But
My God.
speaking about going to shows with Ethan, you mentioned that you guys had gone to a couple shows together. So like, when off the stage, what was your relationship like when you guys were outside of music, when you would have your friendship in general?
Yeah, we went to a few shows. Jay Allen was he probably still is a massive Humphries McGee fan. So we went to a festival downtown that was like an all day, and they were like, I believe, the headliners. And the three of us were there. I actually know one of my old friends is the stage manager for Humphries, so we were still able to get backstage just for that. So he got to meet the band, and he was very happy about that. Jay Allen was. But with Ethan, I mean, he was just so cool. You know, I mean, he was, like I said earlier before we got cut off, he just reminded me of where I come from, you know? So a lot of it was, we'd go out and have drinks, and stuff. But, he's working 6 days a week. I'm working five, at the bar. At the piano bar, and it wasn't we didn't get together as much as possible, as much as we could. But in fact, the few times before the pandemic, I would just sort of walk into like the Blue Martini, because I was in that area, and he's playing with a guy, and I'm like, oh my God, yes, thank God. And then we just hang out for several hours after a show. And that was kind of the way it was. I'd go into this dive bar over by my house, and he's playing video poker with his wife or something. I'm like, what are you doing here? Yeah. So it was just one of those things. But rarely could we find the time to be like, hey man, what are you doing? You want to go whatever, do this. There's the show coming up. I think a few times we did reach out for shows, but it never transpired because I don't recall going to a lot of shows later on after the band kind of fell apart, dissipated. So he got into his projects and I got back into the dueling pianos, and that was, and we would just sort of stay in touch. But it was always like it felt like a necessity to do it, I don't know if that makes sense. It just felt like he was just that clothesline that you hang on to, to your past. Because he's the same guy, he was the guy that I when I left St. Louis, and all my Dead show friends and the whole jam scene there, and it was really a lot of that, and I just was nurtured in that scene. And then you get hired at this dueling piano bar, and it's the polar opposite of what you were ever doing. I was in like four original bands back then. Two of them were complete improv, and it was just a your time, just so you're the prime of your life. And then you get hired with into this career where you're making really good money, compared to like gig money, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then it moves you across the country to Arizona, and then it gives you an opportunity to just fully form as like all parts of you, the comedy part, the improvisational stuff, the vocals and the piano, and then you get to learn drums and a little bit of bass, and it just sort of fully forms you, but at the cost of what you ever kind of grew up on. You grew up on these songs, yeah, but it's a different scene, you know? That's why when I'd come off of work at the piano bar and I'd see the drum circle, I would just get like tingles, you know? I'm like, oh, sweet, you know, let's fire up a joint or whatever, you know, and I watch a drum circle go on and stuff. And Ethan resembled all that, you know. He was just really real, and he approached his instrument real, and he knew real friends, you know. He knew like the Jay Allens, you know. I'm swimming in a sea of 21-year-old frat guys and sorority girls and college kids and everything, and you just get lost in all of that. And you know, it was just a godsend that Ethan came into the band, and he's like, here's my friend Jay, and you're just like, you just go hang out with these guys and all of their friends, and you're like, I feel like I just came home. You know what
Yeah,
I mean?
totally.
And so, yeah. And so it went beyond the musicality and the musical relationship that we had. Obviously, that was a huge part of it, but you know, I'm just getting tingles right now thinking about it,
Yeah.
because it doesn't exist anymore. You know, I can go see Jay play his gigs and stuff whenever I can, but you know, it's just, he's got two kids, he's married. You know, Ethan is obviously, you know, not able to be called upon right now, and it's different. But it was that was the my favorite part of him was like we found each other through music, and we continued, you know, on a level after the band broke up, but only because it was important, maybe to me, and he probably recognized the same in me. It's like this guy's. He's from the same brother. He's a brother from another mother. You know, we're cut from the same cloth. And so it was just in a sea of all of that, you get lost in the dueling piano world and the noise and the drinks and the people. And just, you know, it's fun to actually go hang out with people that are cut from the same cloth, maybe your age, you know, and share the same kinships with you and stuff. And that was what I truly was impressed upon with him after the band broke up, was just, it's like, we're never going to stop hanging out.
Yeah.
This is lifelong, you know?
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. With so many people that he performed with, he became very good friends with him.
Yeah. And that's why I think that's why this is what you're doing is so amazing. And it's ex
Oh,
probably really
definitely.
successful, because we all have just stories to tell, you know, memories to share. And they're all either they're they could be similar, but there's probably some differentials in them because of the way he just affected everybody. And probably you're probably seeing a lot of the same story, like the same type of mentality to it. Like there's just no other, you know, there
Yeah.
was no other.
Yeah. No, he was a very special person. He was a unicorn, man. That's for sure.
He was a unicorn. That's a
Yeah.
good way to put it.
You
That's
know,
a
like
good way to
we were talking earlier about how Ethan could mix in with any level of musician, you know, and bring the best out of him. But you know, another thing that he was well known for was his humor. And talking to so many people, because I had my own, you know, dynamic with them as far as our humor would go. We'd crack each other up, that kind of thing. But after talking to people and finding out, you know, what kind of jokes he and humor he'd use with them, it was just fascinating to me that he could adapt to any person sort of, you know, if he had a dry sense of humor, he could roll with it. If you were goofy, he could do that. If he could, you know, so like, what kind of humor did you guys share? I mean,
He had a it always he would he had like a I don't think passive aggressive is the right word for it, but just as an example, one of the festival I was telling you about, I was dating a little Filipino girl at the time, and she was a doll, you know. She just liked to doll up. She liked to good look good. She was really not superficial. That was her thing. She just liked to kind of get cutesy. She was younger, you know. And she went to that festival with us, and she was just dolled up in this little tight little dress thing. And this is an outdoor granola festival, you know. Like, and I knew that going in. I'm like, oh, Miley, okay, here, let's go. If you're ready, if that's and Ethan being cut from the same cloth, as soon as we get there, he got his shirt off, you know. He's got Jay's like got a giant 40 boy in his hands, and we're just rolling in, and they're like, "Where you guys been?" I think, yeah, it's a good thing. Finally, you got here. They're not playing for another two bands, but that's great. Hey, Mylene, you're a lot overdressed for this place, but that's all right. And then he would just keep talking. And I'm like, that's exactly what I wanted to tell her, but I can't. He was just, I don't know if that's passive, it's not passive aggressive, it's just sort of in passing. He would just like drop these little comments, and I was, maybe that's because that's the way I do it. Maybe, like, you're right. Maybe he just adapted to his comedic surroundings and
Seems
sort of
that
just,
way anyway from everyone I've talked to.
He,
It's
just
fascinating.
him playing at. Playing the rest of that show sitting in the sofa at Sailin's that I
Right.
told you about. It's like, yeah, I play these songs for a living too. I'm just not going to do them anymore. I'm like, okay, well, you sit over there. We're going to wrap this up then. You don't done, fine.
One of the things that I was always amazed with Ethan, he would crack me up the sometimes how he would deal with not hecklers, but just, whenever, I mean, yeah, from a piano bar, dueling pianos, dude, I'm sure this has happened to you a million times. But the drunkest person in the room wants to come up and tell you what you're gonna play. And I was always so, it would just crack me up the way he would handle people like that, And it was never in a mean or abusive way, but it was definitely a way that made them look how they were acting and got his point across, or he would just laugh at them, and never let it affect his mood or the
Deadpan.
vibe of the show.
Yeah, no, he's too professional for that. But you're right, he had a way of coming across as like kind of dickish, not really, but with a smile on his face. And the show, he's got that smile, that that thing. And he just hunched over his bass and just keep playing, make his comment and just turn away. Just take his bass and crack it over their head. No, he would never. He would never. Yeah, he's too professional.
What did you notice about the way he treated people at gigs or just when you guys were hanging out and stuff like that?
Like I said, I mean, like going back to it, he's just very real, it's, he never had, he was never mean or anything like that. He was, I think he sometimes wanted, let's see how to put this. He was always ready to do whatever the situation called for. He was prepared for whatever, even if it wasn't his first line of thought on how the particular gig was going to go, or anything like that. And that was kind of the nature of our band sometimes, as like a jammy sort of open-ended, here's the song, but let's go wherever it's going to go. And we have to sort of be in a pretty similar train of thought to make it, to pull it off a little bit, but that's on stage, like in social settings. I mean, he was at social settings, he was always just that big smile, always happy to accommodate, anybody for anything, especially if he didn't have to do any, if he wasn't responsible for anybody except himself, kind of thing. He was just very gracious. I mean, he was he was always tended to give people the benefit of the doubt, I guess. He was just really real. I mean, any concert we went to, or any kind of, once we got over the initial, oh my God, we're in the same bar, we didn't plan on it, this is awesome, then it was always a really real conversation. I guess I would just, that's the only word, that's the best word that I can come up. Like, he's the most real. He's going to give you whatever he is. When you talk to him, when you meet him, he's going to give you whatever he is. And you're not going to be disappointed, because I don't know anybody that has ever been disappointed. So let me introduce you to him. That's what I would say to them. Like, he's right in the next room. You got to meet him.
All of us who got to know him were so lucky, man. He was such an
Yeah,
amazing,
no, I
incredible person.
really, really agree with that. And it's, it's, maybe he had the same effect if you had similar conversations with other people that you've invited to this podcast, is how would how would they describe it? You know, he just had a, he just never put a, he only had his, I feel like he had that one face, and it was usually pretty happy to meet you and to be around you.
Yeah.
You know, so it was just inviting and just real.
Yeah, I could agree with that. Do you remember the last conversation or one of the last times that you communicated with them?
I think it was I think it was at that Boston's bar, which is right around the corner from my house, and it's not too far from where he lived either, but far enough where you'd be surprised that he was just there. He was there with his wife playing the video poker game. And he always sort of had a knack for saying the same thing whenever he saw me. Because we never expected, like I said, never planned accordingly. But it would just, we'd wander in. And I think this is after I saw him once at the Baseline Pub. Same thing, just wandered in and he's there. And I don't know how clean we can be on this podcast, but
Go ahead.
every single, almost, I'd say 95% of the time, I felt like every time I'd walk in, he'd see me, he'd be like, fuck you. Fuck you, man. Fuck you. And I'm like, I know, I'm happy to see you too. And then we'd hug, and then we'd talk about the old band and what are you doing? Where can I see you? Oh, you know, another drummer? Yeah, we should do it again. I'd love to. Where you playing at? Well, I gotta do this. And it was just good. You know, we'd have shots, you know,
Sure.
and I think that was the last time we saw him, that I saw him was at the Boston's Bar and Grill right over here at Elliott and McClintock. And it was really sad because I carried that a lot with me whenever I'd go in there, which was kind of often because it's so close and easy to get to and stuff like that. But I think I sent his wife a couple messages just because I was sitting with the last time I saw him right by the video machine, the video poker machine. And I got nostalgic and I was kind of drinking a little or whatever, and I just started thinking about him, so I just wanted to reach out. I know there's been lots of things like his birthday would come up, you know, or I think you guys had a show here recently for him.
The summer in July.
And there was just, you know, just a remembering Ethan kind of page.
Yeah.
And I would just go to that, and I just send her a message saying, I don't know if you know how much he meant to me or anything like that, but he did tell her that. He's like, this is the guy I was telling you about. This is Mikey C. This is the guy in the final. I told you, this is my favorite album I've ever made.
Yeah.
And it just like, it crushes me to think about that, you know, because I don't know why. I mean, somebody like that's made so many good things, you know,
Yeah.
maybe he says that to all the guys, but I don't know. I mean, just even if he did, it doesn't matter because it was the best thing that I ever made. And it was mostly because of him and
Yeah.
me, you know, and Nick. But, you know, we locked down. Me and him just locked down personally, you know. So it was really cool to hear him say that to his wife and say, this is the guy I was telling you about, you know. And I had not really known her, you know, that well before he
You're
passed.
talking about Kirsten?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that is the sick. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
So
Right on.
I think about that a lot, you know, just
Sure.
to.
Well, you're not alone, man. You know, we all, it's for me, it's the most random thing. I mean, definitely being in Phoenix this summer for his tribute show. I think it's a common experience because we all loved him so much and he loved us so much that kind of thing doesn't just fade, you know. So
And that's right. I agree. And that's probably why I reached out to Kirsten. I didn't really know her that well at all. But it's not like I could call him sitting there at Boston's going, hey, man, I miss you terribly. It was almost like I was like, I just want you to know how much he meant to me. And
Yeah.
if if there was an option to call him, I would have been like, where are you at? Let's go. What are you doing right now? I just miss you. It's been a while.
Sure.
And it's just it's hard not to take that for granted because time passes and things happen. But it's sad where you can't, like you said, you can't reach out like, hey man, I got this thing. I'm writing these new songs. You're obviously going to be part of it. Let's find a drummer. And oh, I wish I could have seen that show. I didn't know about it until I saw a post of it. Like, was it in August, I think?
No, it was towards the end of July. The exact date escapes me, 17th maybe,
Okay.
or something like that, or maybe the 13th, July 13th.
Yeah. I don't know.
But yeah, oh, it was
That
great.
would.
It was a good time.
I'm so glad that, and that warms my heart, that after what, 4 years or so that he's been gone, that we're still doing this shit, and I love that. We're doing the podcast, and there was a tribute, just this past year.
We covered a lot tonight, and I appreciate you giving us your time and answering my questions. But was there anything that you thought of today that you wanted to mention that we haven't covered in our conversation?
I thought of one thing. If he was actually here, I just would, if he's listening, I just wanted him to know that we're doing okay, and there's just a obviously a tremendous loss that exists still to this day. I have 4 years later, we're still doing things like this, and I think that's wonderful, and that's very special to how much he impacted our lives, and it's and we were just blessed really to be around him. But I did want to apologize to him on one thing. I have a copy of our album, our CD that we put out, and in the credits page, I thanked these people, blah blah blah. Nick wishes to thank blah blah blah. And Ethan wishes to thank Mike and Nick and everyone at the Sail Inn and my light and savior, Horace of Giza. And I just wanted to apologize for misspelling Horace in the thanks page. I'm sure Horace would be very upset and very happy to know that Ethan's light and savior, Horace, is Horace and not Set. So I'm glad I'm
Got to
glad I
clear that
got that
up.
out after all these years. I hope you're listening. If I could do it over, I would, my brother. I'd spell your savior's name right.
That's
But
pretty
I, there's a crater. There's a crater out here, still,
Sure.
that exists, and there is no replacing that. I think that it was just something that it was, like you said earlier, a unicorn. We got to experience the unicorn, so
Yeah, we
we have to
did.
be thankful. We have to be thankful for that.
Amen, brother. I agree with you.
Yeah.
Well, the last question I always ask on the podcast is one that you kind of answered already with your thoughts, and but I like to ask, if you had the opportunity to say one last thing to him, what would it be?
I would just thank him. That's the first thing that comes into my head. Thank you for being a part of my life. We covered a lot of that sentiment during the course of this conversation tonight. But it's, just the fact that we got to experience him in all of his entirety, everything that he was, which was, like I just said, the crater sized. You can move on, but you never forget. And it crosses my mind quite a bit, especially when I see common players in his life like Jay or yourself, or anybody that knew him like that. And what would I say to him? I would just, I mean, what else can you say? We never, nobody got to say anything, we couldn't get our last goodbyes, or we couldn't get the clothes. We didn't even know, some of us didn't, I didn't, until he was gone. And that was I mean, what can you say? Can you just, if you had like 30 seconds to say something to him, like, I love you to death. Thank you for changing my life for the better. You know, your impact was huge. And I thank you for that. I'll never forget it.
It's well said. Right on. Well, Mike, man, I really appreciate you taking the time and your patience of finding a day that finally worked for both of us, being so busy.
My pleasure. And, you know, I was looking forward to this for so long. And
me too.
This has been great. It's just so good to like revisit all of this, you know. So whatever, if you ever wanted to do it again, I'm down. I'm totally game. So
yeah, for sure, man. There's a few people that have mentioned the same thing to me, you know, because you just, it's hard to get it all with a guy like Ethan. It's hard to fit it all in.
I know. It's like, we're going to stop and I'm like, oh, I should have told him about this thing. Or, oh, if he did this one thing, it would have been great.
But I can't tell you how many texts I got from people after the fact. Oh, I should have mentioned this or that.
Can you add this in?
Yeah, right. I actually did that a couple times.
Did you? That's funny. Well, I cannot wait to hear the edited version of all this. And
right on.
I'm here whenever you keep my number. Obviously, come at whenever you come into town. I'm here for you. So let's get a drink and hang out.
For sure, man. I'd love to spend some time with you. I can tell from our conversation why Ethan dug hanging out with you and became your friend. You know,
he's great. Yeah, he was just one of a kind, cut from the same cloth. Everything we've talked about is he was special. Like, this is a place in my heart forever just because of that. You know, the most intriguing thing about him was when he came along in my life, it was almost like I needed some real semblance of everything. I got so lost in my job and all these kids and all the everything that was coming at you. You know, it's nice to see somebody that shares the same values, kind of the same age, you know, same type of everything, music, somebody you can lean on, somebody you can learn on, and somebody that just never is going to leave your life, you know, even when he leaves this life.
Yeah.
So it's maybe I would have included that if I had a chance to say anything to him.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Thank you for doing this. This is wonderful that you could do this. For sure. It's
a pleasure. I've enjoyed every second of it.
Thank you, sir.
I could talk about it even all day long. And you know, and my last thought I would like to add is that, you know, not just the friendship and the love and the music and the, you know, new bands and new way of looking at life and a new approach to how I perform. And, you know, that all that aside, one of the coolest things about Ethan was that he introduced me to some really cool people who've ended up, I mean, really good friends of mine, aside from my relationship with Ethan, and still doing it. You know,
I can't believe it. It's like he's a magician. Good Lord, this guy. He's incredible. Look what he's doing already. Now it's you and me. Now we got to go out.
Yeah, right, man.
I'll book a flight to the UP.
We got to go get a beer and maybe
that's right, we do.
Put some tunes on or something.
No, and that's right. That's exactly what it is. I think we just shared an in-kind type of mentality. And so everybody he introduced you to, I totally get. You know, it's like, you're like, I feel like I just came home. These are good people, you know.
I like that thought, man. I felt like I was home when I was with him as well, for sure.
Yeah.
Mike, you have a good night, man. And again, thanks for all your time. Yeah, and hopefully you get to hang out sometime. And
if I ever get up that way, obviously my aunt and uncle have a place in the UP, and I go see my mom. So if it ever comes around, maybe we could somehow come to the center.
Please do, man. Yeah. If you end up, the UP's not that big, so I can get to wherever you are, man.
Okay. All right. I'll definitely keep that in mind. Absolutely. Thank you, man.
All right, Mike. Take care. Thank you.
I'll see you soon.
Okay. Sounds good.
It's easy to see why Mike and Ethan got along so well. And I really wish that I had a time machine to go back in time and watch those two perform together. I bet it was quite a show to watch. So I'd like to say thanks to Mike for taking the time to talk with me and giving us permission to listen to our conversation. I enjoyed having it as much as I hope you enjoyed listening to it. And I'd also like to take this opportunity to invite anyone else who I've spoken to before or haven't spoken to before to get a hold of me if you'd like to talk about Ethan some more now that some time has gone by. And also anyone that was at the tribute concert this summer, if you would like to get a hold of me and talk a little bit about your experience with that, I would welcome it. If you live in the Phoenix area or plan on visiting soon, make sure that you look Mike up and go out to watch him perform and support local music. I hope everyone out there is doing well. And I just want to say one more time how much I enjoyed putting this episode together. And I look forward to doing more in the future. I'd like to leave you today with a song that Mike shared with us called Gingham Princess. This is a song that Mike wrote and Ethan plays bass on. Take care. Thank you. And we'll see you soon. Mm-hmm.